Welcome to the Sermon Podcast of Redemption Church. The following sermon is by Redemption Elder Justin Wolgemuth.
Alrighty, Exodus 9 and 10. We've got the story of Moses. We've got Pharaoh. We've got Pharaoh and his hard heart. I feel like this is a difficult one. I grumbled more than once this week since agreeing to do the message. it kind of hits hard. It before my study of it this week, I sort of found it difficult to think about how this could inform my understanding of God or like what it could do for my lived experience today. And you have this continuing element of each time it seems like Pharaoh is going to wise up, like he's going to, okay, I need to stop this, or these plagues are going to keep happening. It seems like he's going to wise up, and then his heart is hardened. Usually the wording is that God hardened Pharaoh's heart, though also intermittently Pharaoh seems to be an equal partner in that hardening. So, yeah, it was just kind of hard for me to know where to go. As many of you know, I'm a therapist. I work primarily with adult men looking for therapy for anxiety, anger, depression, relational challenges, whatever. So as I read this story over and over, trying to like offer something, I couldn't help but see it as a therapist, like through a therapy lens. I read and watched Pharaoh repeatedly doing the wrong thing. He doesn't heed God's warning. He suffers greatly and causes the suffering of those around him. He gives false promises and he goes back on his word. He's continually bringing his own destruction. So as a therapist, I started to think, how would I help this guy? What is it that's getting in Pharaoh's way? What does it mean to have a hard heart? And what would it take for his heart to be softened? So this brings us to our title today, and the task at hand. Pharaoh on the couch. AI did that image, isn't that crazy?
Just like your beard. Okay.
I hope to look like that therapist someday. I mean, it'd be good to keep my hair, but. So let's do a thought experiment. Let's say that Pharaoh has decided to come to therapy. It's by the request of Moses and some of the people around him. He's at least partially willing. He'll show up. For the sake of the thought experiment, we don't know anything about him. So we're looking over his intake document, and it looks at first glance like he's had a pretty tough go of things. He's got this workforce that is refusing to work. They're rebelling against him. He has these guys that keep showing up and giving threats. Moses and Aaron just are like annoying him. The water in this city has been polluted and turned to blood. The whole place smells like dead frogs. There's this freak gnat and fly infestation. There's an outbreak of boils. He's lost his livestock. The ones that survived the first killing were smashed by a hailstorm. Any of the crops that survived the hailstorm were eaten up by a swarm of locusts just out of nowhere. And then he's got these friends, the magicians. They've all turned their back on him too. And then what part we didn't read, he has 3 days of total darkness. So the lights are shut out in his apartment. He can't even see around. So he's had a rough go. We might, you know, we're therapists, so we're thinking, okay, well, maybe we're going to have compassion on this guy. We're going to have to empathize with him. Maybe this will be supportive therapy, sort of processing grief. We'll move on from there. But, you know, as soon as you kind of start talking to this guy, the picture becomes more clear. It kind of turns out he's been so cruel to his workforce that he was asking for a revolt. The threats by Moses and Aaron were actually... There's good warning, and there's an opportunity to change each time. It could have been avoided. half the blood in the Nile and half of the dead frogs are actually his fault because he asked the magicians to add to it. And those magicians that were his friends, they stayed with him for a while until eventually they're like, hey, this has got to stop. Like, you need to change. And of course, all along, he's been pretty toxic. He's given false promises. He's tried to go back on his word. He's just been really difficult to work with. So it seems like this is a guy that can't get out of his own way. It turns out he's so much of his current trouble is the result of his own doing, or his hard heart. What do you do when you're working with the hard-hearted as a therapist? I'm looking for recommendation. What do you do when you're interacting with a bad dude? Somebody that's running headfirst into a wall and heading toward their destruction. So, you're a good therapist. You do the hard work of empathy. You take a moment to do some self-examination. And you try to find that inclination within yourself, however faint or how loud it might be, to do something like what your client is doing or experiencing. Where are you angling for success to get your own way? Where are you portraying yourself as better than you are for your gain? Who are you holding back from good opportunities? Who are you viewing as less or undeserving or forgettable? Basically, where are you hard-hearted? And where are you Pharaoh? So, a bit of context on your orientation as a therapist. We've got another slide here. This is Carl Rogers. He was a preeminent father of psychotherapy. He practiced and wrote in the 40s to 70s, kind of. He's informed so much of how therapists, and I just think people in general, perhaps in the Western world, understand relational health, education, parenting, how to be a therapist, how to help people. And his techniques and forms sort of undergird like essentially any therapy you might get today. Things like active listening, like trusting and examining a person's experience, summarizing what you're hearing and giving it back to a person, that's Carl Rogers, being authentic. And his big thing is unconditional positive regard. So unconditional positive regard is kind of what it sounds like. It's this approach or attitude of a person or therapist to see another person as, you know, possibly messed up and maybe even evil, but despite all that, still a person. And a person with all those things still deserves respect, esteem, care, and help. Rogers made this positive regard his primary goal in therapy. He describes it as like a way of being. And he holds that above any other framework or idea about how to help people. We have another slide here. So Roger said, if I can provide a certain type of relationship, the other person will discover within himself the capacity to use that relationship for growth, and change in personal development will occur. This has been like really helpful for me as a therapist. Sometimes I'll sit with a person and what's going on with them is complicated and painful and self-induced, or not self-induced. Sometimes I have no good way to conceptualize how to help a person out. But for Rogers and in my experience too, having some idea of what the person needs to do or to change about themselves is really a secondary task. The primary task being how can I facilitate a relationship in which this person experiences themselves as known and understood and safe and maybe even kind of enjoyed and admired? So Roger's really kind of betted on, like, if you do this first and foremost and you do it well, a person will essentially change what they need to change within themselves. Another slide here. Paul says a similar thing. This is a translation from The Message. So when outsiders who have never heard of God's law follow it more or less by instinct, they confirm its truth by their obedience. They show that God's law is not something alien imposed on us from without, but woven into the very fabric of our creation. There's something deep within them that echoes God's yes and no, right and wrong. So this is, it's kind of, it takes a new sort of logic. It won't be external forces that change a person. It won't even be Moses showing up with threats of painful boils and destroyed crops and death. Instead, it would be Pharaoh coming to some experience of being known and understood and cared for that would create a space in which he could stare at himself. That he could see right and wrong, and that he could come to terms with who he is or what he's done, what he needs to do. It's actually on the far end of relationship that change can happen. Okay, so we're therapists again. We've encountered Rogers and we buy into his way of being approached, which not all therapists do, but we do. And so we're sitting with Pharaoh in the therapy room. What do? We try to facilitate and embody the kind of relationship that can produce a change. We seek to know the person. We ask curious questions. We reflect back to them what they're saying to us and kind of see how it bounces off. And we'll even kind of tune into and turn up the dials on that part that might be saying, you know, I'm sort of at odds with myself here. I can kind of feel there's this dissonance here. I think it's actually in a space like that, it's actually in a space where you're experienced as accepted and felt as accepted, that something like a firm word or a stern confrontation will actually do something. And it's through this time and this patience that we see that a hard heart can become softer and softer and softer. So I might be making a message for the therapists and helpers in the room to encourage them in patient therapeutic work. And so if it does that, that's great. But I think it is more than that. Like I mentioned, part of the work of a good therapist is to find that part of humanity exhibited in the other within ourselves. It's to find that part of ourselves that, I can feel where I might have that inclination to do something harmful to someone else or to bring about my own destruction. So the question is, where is that part of you that's hard-hearted? Where's that part in me? Like I said, I buy into this way of being approach. I think it's highly effective when a therapist does it well. But I really only think it's effective because... I think it's effective there because I think it is effective anywhere. I think it's within the fabric of the universe. What if I could deeply and in a real way experience myself as known and safe and understood and kind of even liked by God? What if I had some experiential knowledge of being loved just as I actually am, even before I change or before I overcome my flaws that might need to happen? But what if I was just like cosmically okay already? I think for me, it would help me let go of the pesky feeling that I have of being unshakably bad or inadequate at times. I might shake feeling unlikable or annoying to my friends who continually only convey love and enjoyment in me. I could release my feelings of superiority over those that are less self-aware than me or don't think like I do or don't buy into the way of being approach of therapy. I could let others be as they are, broken and annoying and pleasant and lovely as that is. So, within the context of our story here, Pharaoh doesn't really get that patient work in the Exodus story. Or at least he doesn't tune into how his arrogance and his pride are fronts for a vulnerable, present, and fully loved self. So, as we've looked at, we are Pharaoh, but we're also not. We have the opportunity to know and experience our lovedness in a way that I think Pharaoh doesn't get. Just as this way of being that causes change is true, we get the chance to experience God's way of being with us. So, how do we do this? I have a couple thoughts, and we will ease the crying children. I've heard it said somewhere, and I just find it to be true. God's primary means for displaying grace to us is through other people. Unfortunately, other people can treat us very poorly, and lots of people have lives that are filled with relationships that look a lot different than Roger's way of being. But I do think it's a great place to start. I think to come to a greater understanding of God's safe and accepting way of being with us, we can consider a person. Or I'll put it this way, consider a person in your life who has shown you this kind of being. With whom do you experience safety? Who knows your strengths and your weaknesses and accepts you fully nonetheless? Your lived experience in a relationship like this is a perfect glimpse of God's loving presence with you. I came across this idea at some point that there's no way that God loves me less than a good friend does. There's no way that God loves me less than Gary or Scotty or Aiden. It was a helpful reframe for me. We have this way, or at least I have this way of thinking of God's presence and love as something other. It's kind of an idea, but it's a faint idea. And really, the experience of love and friendship is like real and felt. So, at least for an exercise, but I think it's theologically true. You could say that a friend loving you well is an actual expression of God loving you. A friend exhibiting this way of being is being Christ to you. So if you start there, the next level beyond that is to imagine greater love. A friend can love you knowing your ugly and negative pieces, but God actually knows all parts of your being, and even parts that you don't know yourself or that you don't want to look at, and still holds them in love. If you can start with your understanding of that person that knows you and with whom you are safe, you can then point a trajectory and imagine how God could even surpass that. And maybe it just needs to be that it's certainly not less than that. It's certainly not less than how a good friend can love you. Another way to come to a greater understanding of God's way of being, and this probably deserves more time to be built out, but I think it's a good starting point. We can bring our parts of ourselves into God's accepting gaze. When I was a kid, growing up as a very earnest Christian kid, this didn't really compute. I had parts of myself that I thought were holding me back from God. I thought I was not having acceptance and peace with God because I hadn't gotten rid of these things. And I tried to keep them far from myself, even. To keep them far from me, I thought, was to keep them far from God so that I could be closer to Him. I pushed them into the shadows and I didn't want to face them. So in some mysterious way, those spaces that we don't want to bring to God are the way to a deeper and richer experience of God. We can bring them and experience the non-judgmental and accepting, loving presence of God. Bring doubt, bring pain, bring shame and fear and anxiety and sexuality and self-hatred. Fred said this earlier, that rejecting these parts, rejecting your emotions or parts of self, really causes them to just go into the shadow. And in the shadow, they can grow and become bigger and more troubling. To bring ugly and scary parts of yourself into focus shows that they too can be accepted as part of the whole. This is to experience God's way of being, seeing and accepting and not running away from you. And He's already standing by you without your awareness. So, this is where we conclude. A hard heart tries to protect you against ways that you're broken. A soft heart knows it's exactly where you are broken and vulnerable, that Christ can meet us. It's in weakness and ugliness and normalness that Christ can heal us into greater wholeness.
To find out more about Redemption Church, visit redemptionbristol.org.